it's Thursday, November 17th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio. I'm going to tell a little story here, and as it's completed, then Lisa's going to jump in and we're going to discuss what happened. On the morning of October 5th, 2004, a 13-year-old girl named Imam El-Hams was walking to school just like she did every other morning. Now, photographs of this girl at the time show a skinny little 13-year-old with long dark hair who frequently wore a white ribbon in her hair. She wore a white shirt, blue jeans, and there was nothing out of the ordinary about her. Well, on this morning, for whatever reason, Imam strayed away from the beaten path. In her hand, she was carrying nothing more than a book bag, nothing else. As she wandered too close to an Israeli military post, she quickly came under the scrutiny of soldiers in a watchtower who were viewing her through binoculars. What they noticed very rapidly, and what they told other soldiers on the ground via radio dispatches, was they described Imam as a little girl who looked scared to death. In other words, this 13-year-old girl wasn't a terrorist. She wasn't carrying bombs. What she did was she lost her way and she strayed too close to an Israeli military outpost. Regrettably, this decision would be a fatal one for Imam, because in no time, Israeli sharpshooters caught sight of her in their guns, and soon these soldiers, who were standing less than a football field away, which in military terms is very, very close, started open fire on Imam. As the shots rang out around her, what did this little girl do? She dropped her book bag, then stood there empty-handed outside of this military outpost. Terrified, she started to walk away when all of a sudden more shots rang out from the Israeli snipers. Imam didn't get very far before, boom, one of these shots caught her from behind and she dropped to the ground. As she laid there in the street, wounded, probably dying, an Israeli platoon commander, who was later to become known as Commander or Captain R, approached Imam. As he stood over top of her, her book bag far away by now, he looked at her, pulled his gun, and then emptied two shots into the back of her head, opening up a 2-inch gash in the girl's skull. Without a doubt, this meant instant death to Imam El-Hams. But that's not the end of the story, because Captain R turned around and started walking away from the young girl. But then he did an about-face, turned back around, and approached the girl yet again. As she laid there in the street, her head bleeding, her body motionless, Captain R took his gun and emptied the entire magazine into the 13-year-old child's corpse. Every single bullet in the gun was fired into her body. Now, you have to remember, Captain R later said that all he was trying to do was to confirm the kill, which is standard procedure for the Israeli Defense Force. But after he fired, or before he fired these 17 shots into her body, previously she had stood there empty-handed. She was more than 100 yards away from the military outpost, and she wasn't a threat to anyone. In addition, there wasn't a single Israeli soldier that morning who was under attack in any way. Yet Captain R, this commander of the Israeli Defense Force at this military outpost, took his gun and fired every single round into her body. Finally, as she laid there slaughtered, they would later find out that there were over 20 bullets total in her body, in her chest, in her head, in her legs, her arms, and her hands. Her skull was nearly blasted open from ear to ear, and they later found 3 bullets in her head. While all of this was taking place, Captain R, realizing that a huge mistake had been made, started to cover his tracks by commanding his subordinates to alter their stories about what had taken place. Some of them did, but others, those with a conscience, were so sickened by this bloodbath that they went to the press afterward and gave a true accounting of the sick, barbaric act that took place before their eyes. Worst of all, if that is possible, the Israeli troops who surrounded Imam's body refused to let paramedics or ambulances approach her body for nearly an hour. So this innocent child, who was obviously dead at this point, filled with over 20 bullets, received no medical attention whatsoever, nor did they even allow her the respect to remove her body from the streets as it laid in a pool of blood. Now, we bring this story up because yesterday in Israel, Captain R was in a military court and he was acquitted of all charges. He was found not guilty on all charges by this Israeli military court. When he heard the verdict, Captain R stood, turned to all of those in attendance in the courtroom, and exclaimed, "I told you I was innocent."
It's an unbelievable story. For the killing of this little girl, the captain was originally indicted on some very minor counts. 2 counts of illegal use of weapons, a count of obstruction of justice for the initial false report that he made, behavior unbecoming an officer, and improper use of authority that endangered others. Now, do you notice a charge missing there? How about the charge of cold-blooded murder?
Right.
He was not charged with murder, and the little girl's family and the family's Israeli lawyer were understandably angered by the light charges. But this is not a case that exists in a vacuum. This is notorious for Israel. They hand out very lenient charges, if any, against their own soldiers when it comes to crimes committed against Palestinians, especially vulnerable groups like women, children, and the elderly. And even if this captain had been found guilty on those minor counts, he would have potentially served as little as 3 years. Can you believe this?
It's unbelievable. And as Lisa said, this isn't the first time this has happened. She reminded me last night that last year we had Allison Weir on our show on 2 successive days. And Allison also recounted this story and also many others that were similar to it, where the Israeli Defense Force kills in cold blood Palestinian children.
Now, on the other hand, if a Palestinian kills an Israeli and they're arrested, this Palestinian is almost certain to receive life in prison or be killed himself. Now, think about this. We think that we have abuses and gross violations of the law here in this country. Imagine living over in Israel where the conditions are quite different. This little girl, who was 13 years old, she looked to be about 10 years old. And this isn't the only case of this. If you recall, a couple of years ago, in March of 2003, Rachel Corey, an American, was also killed by the Israeli Defense Force. She was run over by a bulldozer as she stood atop a mound of dirt, trying to protest the destruction and demolition of a Palestinian family's home. And she stood on top of that mound of dirt, looking directly into the driver's eyes, and he ran over her anyway. The Israeli military police that investigated that case exonerated those soldiers as well. And they say that she couldn't be seen. She was standing behind the mound of dirt. They made excuses and they got away with it. It was a case of the military investigating itself.
I'm wondering if you can be found guilty in Israel of anything.
The worst thing about that whole case was that the U.S. did nothing about it. And that was one of our own.
Yeah, that was one of our own citizens. This has become quite a cause celeb in this country. And it's known in many, many circles. Yet our own government didn't find it necessary to interject for even 1 second or come to the defense of Rachel Corey.
Now, in the case of Imam, senior Israeli officers said the soldiers opened fire because they believed she was carrying a bomb in her school bag. Well, they riddled the school bag with bullets, which automatically proved there was no explosive device in the school bag. And then the other excuse was that they thought she was trying to lure them out so they could be picked off by snipers. Well, as Victor just said, none of those soldiers were attacked by anyone. So basically, they just killed this little girl in cold blood, lied to try to cover it up, and then the Israeli military army basically gave them a free pass. Now, what does this say? What lesson does this teach the other people living around there? The other Israeli soldiers, Israeli settlers, it gives them license to kill Palestinians in cold blood because they don't have to fear any repercussions.
Right. And in all fairness, we can even understand, considering the volatile area in the Mideast, that soldiers on both the Palestinian and the Israeli side would be wary of anybody carrying anything in their hands. But what Imam, when the gunfire first broke out around her, the first thing she did was drop her book bag. And as Lisa said, the soldiers immediately filled it with gunfire to see if there was a bomb in there. Now, I would imagine all that she was wearing other than that was her school uniform and maybe a coat. This girl looked terrified to death, not like someone who was a terrorist ready to blow up this military outpost.
Captain R, after his acquittal, spoke to reporters, and he said, "I am delighted. There was only one accurate version from the start, and that was my own, and I'm glad that is what the court found." Now, the family of the victim never expected to get any fair treatment by the Israeli court. This acquittal is seen by the Israeli army as a certificate of honor, and they're saying it confirms the high moral standards of the Israeli Defense Force. Maybe we should talk a little bit about their high moral standards.
Well, first, before you get to that, also, didn't Captain R say that he would do the same thing if it was a 3-year-old
Absolutely.
Child?
He had actually ordered anything that moves within that zone to be killed, whether it was a 3-year-old or anyone older.
Yeah, ponder that for a second. He said he would have even murdered in cold blood a 3-year-old child, yet he exclaims afterwards, when he's found innocent, that he knew it all along, that he was innocent. It's unbelievable what they get away with.
Yeah. So let's get back to their high moral standards toward Palestinians. Maybe we should include in the high moral standard code that they live by the acts of blatant genocide or the systematic perpetration of grave breaches of the Fourth Geneva Convention, namely war crimes. Or how about the methods of ethnic cleansing or the crime of apartheid? How about all of those? These crimes are well documented and well established.
Everywhere in the world, nearly every country, if they follow the New World Order credo, they want to break down walls. They want to break down barriers. Look what happened in South Africa with their apartheid. Look what happened in Germany when they took down the Berlin Wall. In this country, there's many people that propose building a wall from San Diego to the Gulf Coast, 2,000 miles to keep out illegal aliens. Whenever anybody mentions that, they're almost immediately labeled a racist for trying to erect walls and barriers. Yet, in Israel, they're building a 455-mile wall that isn't just a simple wall. This has military outposts, it has razor wire, it has gun posts. And it has ditches and triple barriers along it. This is meant as a way to separate one country from another, and it's the only country in the world that is allowed to be doing it, even though they have been admonished many times by the United Nations, yet America remains strangely silent.
Right. In fact, we're strangely neutral to the dispossession and denationalization of the Palestinians. We're neutral when it comes to the Palestinians being forcibly expelled by the hundreds of thousands from their land, their homes, dispossessed of their property. We're neutral when it comes to the brutal torture they undergo, the harsh conditions, the arbitrary arrests, the war on civilians. And let's just get into this for a second, because it isn't just the Palestinians that are dying. The Israelis are dying, but the Palestinians are dying at a disproportionate number. Since September 2000, over 700 Palestinian children have been killed by Israeli soldiers. Around 100 victims were Israeli children. So you see the disproportionate number there. You want to talk about what it's like to be a Palestinian child? They're exposed to extreme violence, killings, torture, harassment, displacement, and destruction of their homes and schools. An overwhelming number of these Palestinian children show symptoms of psychological trauma, decreased weight and appetite, sleep disorders, depression, abnormal thoughts of death. 500,000 of these Palestinian children have been prevented from receiving required vaccinations due to school closures and invasions.
And anyone that wants to see the disparity in deaths among these two nations, go to Ellison Weir's site. Is it ifamericansknew.org?
Right.
.org. And she has an article that shows all of the numbers.
Right.
And we hear so much propaganda in the news about the great loss of Israeli life. Well, this just absolutely is not the case. And when you look at our budget every year, when you hear month after month, these skyrocketing, all-time record-high deficits, yet you look at how much money we give in foreign aid to each nation. Every single year, we give the most money to our quote-unquote ally in Israel, the one that supposedly shares so much in common with America. Well, does this sound to you like this is a value system that we share in common with the people in this country?
I'm glad you brought that up, Victor, because more than 364,000 children, Palestinian children, have suffered directly due to the reduction of the main source of income in their homes. That's from their parents. About 75% of Palestinians currently live below the poverty line, which is $2 a day.
Right.
Even the bulldozer that they ran Rachel Corrie over was gotten from the United States.
Yeah. We give them, when everything is considered, approximately $10 billion a year so that they can build one of the most impressive, one of the most brutal, one of the most bloodthirsty war machines on the planet. And when we talk about weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East, which is supposedly the reason why we went to war in the Middle East, in Iraq, there's only one nation still in the entire region that has nuclear weapons. And who is that?
Well, Israel.
Israel, of course.
I guess that's allowed. More on Palestinian children. They're routinely arrested, detained, and imprisoned. They suffer physical and psychological torture with these arbitrary arrests. They're denied lawyers and family visits. Hundreds of children are currently being held prisoners in Israeli prisons and detention centers inside Israel and around Gaza. The majority of the children arrested are forcibly taken from their homes at night. Once they're taken, they're blindfolded and removed in a military van and immediately interrogated. Almost all of these arrested children undergo torture, including beatings, sleep deprivation, isolation, position abuse, and verbal abuse. Child prisoners face harsh conditions, and they're often mixed in with criminal prisoners. So this ends up to where they're cut with razors, they're scalded with boiling water, they're beaten, and sexual abuses have been reported too. Does this surprise you?
On Wing TV, we talk a lot about what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false. And you have to ask yourself now, why aren't we hearing more of this in the news? Well, everybody knows that the mainstream media is almost entirely owned and controlled by the Zionists, in the corporate media. But ask yourself, how about the alternative media? Why aren't we hearing more stories like this about what happened to Imam al-Hams, about Captain R that took his gun and riddled her body with 17 bullets as she laid wounded and dying in the street? Why aren't we hearing this from the alternative media? Could it be that they're also shying away from the Zionist picture?
Well, naturally. In the last couple of weeks, a 12-year-old boy named Ahmed Al-Khatib was killed after the post-Ramadan holidays. He was shot and killed by Israeli soldiers. He was outside playing with some friends in his brand new holiday clothes with a little toy gun. Israeli soldiers thought he was an armed gunman, and they shot him twice, once in the torso and once in the head.
See, I don't believe they thought that. They just used that as an
excuse. That's their story,
right,
and they're sticking with it. The father of this little boy stayed in the hospital with him for 3 days, and when it was finally determined that he was clinically dead with no chance of recovery, this man decided to donate his son's organs.
so that others could
because
live.
He said that the Israeli soldiers took his son's life, and he wanted to give life to people who needed it. And so the recipients of this child's organs were six Israelis, believe it or not. And he hopes that this will be a step toward peace. He's calling to the consciences of the parents of Israeli children because he wants to see this end, this violence that's killing their children on both sides.
There is no more dangerous nation on the earth right now than Israel. And there is no nation that's luring America into more trouble and more demise than the nation of Israel. On Monday, we ran an article on the Wing TV homepage that was called Israel is Not Our Ally. From everything you've heard in the last 20 minutes, does this sound like a nation that we should be stretching our hand out to, that we should be giving our tax money to, and that we should be putting our neck on the chopping block for? If you ask me, I would answer no to all three questions.
Let me leave you with this one last thought. Think about this for a minute. Materials that condemn the state of Israel for its systematic violations of international human rights and humanitarian law, or condemn racist practices conducted in the name of Zionism, are not anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. You know what they are, folks? They're simply truthful.
That's right. Ask not only your mainstream media, but your alternative media. Why aren't they talking about these issues? There's people that say there's nothing more dangerous confronting our nation right now than the terrorist nation of Israel. Yet there's a void of information from almost every news source in this country. Why? Why is that?
We better start thinking about where that tax money's going. Are we funding terrorism?
Cold-blooded murders. And we're going to dedicate this show to Imam Elhams and also her family. And it's just, when we saw what happened and the grave injustice that resulted from this Israeli military court, we had to bring this to everybody's attention, because if we allow this to happen, then we allow anything to happen.
We better start demanding wider perspectives, all perspectives on a story. Because you see, we only get the Israeli version of it from the mainstream media. And we never get to see what's going on and what's happening to the Palestinian people.
Right. And even though the mainstream media is by and large out of touch, out of contact to the everyday person, every one of these alternative radio shows takes phone calls, ask them why they're not covering these stories. Now tomorrow, we're going to focus our attention on Mr. Tucker Carlson.
Mm.
And it seems like not only did he railroad Professor Stephen E. Jones for 6 minutes during his appearance on MSNBC, but it appears that he's doing a lot of bad-mouthing on his blog site.
Oh,
that
really?
Is unbelievable. So we're going to focus our attention on him tomorrow and raise quite a few points that need some discussion. So until then, keep your eyes open, because there is a lot going on.
See you then.
Yvonne bears his war wound like a crown. It calls his child Jesus, 'cause he lights the name, and he sends him to the finest school in town. Yvonne, Yvonne likes his money. He makes a lot, they say. Spends his days counting in a garage by the motorway. He was born upon the two upon on a Christmas day, when the New York Times said God is dead and the war's begun. Alvin Toffsinger hailed the sun today, and he shall believe on, and he shall. Jesus blows up balloons all day. Sits on the porch swing.